think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
They're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob,
Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 246 of Low Limit Football on this 1st of July 2019 on the Beyond the Pitch and FNX Media Networks. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we are back after a two-week hiatus, but it is championship week as the semifinals get set to take place in the Copa America, Gold Cup, and Women's World Cup. We have got three great guests tonight lined up to help break it all down. Neil Blackman from the Yanks are coming, Jesse Loesch from Unusual Efforts, and Simon Edwards from World Football Index will be joining us tonight. First off, my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas, are you well rested from your vacation, sir?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Thank you for the introduction, Joe. No, I mean, I'm absolutely not rested because now I actually want to, I have the energy of, and obviously we're going to talk about it later in our interview today, but I actually have the energy of the two games that we have in the Copa America. I actually want to go back to Brazil like right now.
Yeah,
to
I
be fair, it was an amazing trip. Obviously I'll talk about it a little bit more, but no, I'm not rested at all, but in a way that's a good thing.
I think you're drinking too many caprinas if you ask me, but that's okay. But let's just jump into it because we obviously have a jam-packed show tonight. So joining us right now on Low Limit Football, returning to us, is Mr. Neil Blackman. Neil, thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you?
Good. A little tired still from France, but you know, doing okay. Thanks for having me.
Am I the only one staying home and not leaving the country?
That's on you, Joe.
Yeah,
maybe this summer.
August.
Maybe just this summer.
August, I'll be out of the country in August, so don't worry about it. I'll get my chance. So, Neil, let's get into it, man. Obviously, you've been following the Gold Cup very closely for the Yanks. Yanks are coming. I've seen you tweet. You've had some great tweets along the way. And seriously, for the folks listening, if you're not following Neil, you're crazy. You got to get and follow him because it's been fantastic. But like, give me your impressions of the tournament so far.
I mean, they've won every game.
Yeah, I guess, right?
They've won every game.
I wish it was that simple. Yeah. I wish it was that simple.
Yeah, isn't it? Isn't that so funny, Rob? Like, especially when you have so much to unpack with a national team like we do with the men, the U.S. men right now.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were to have, like, kind of evaluate it, I would say that they had one really good performance against Trinidad and Tobago, and then kind of a game that I'm not really sure you can take anything away from against Panama, and other than they found a way to win. And then the opening game against Guyana, where they have an opponent that's outmatched, they didn't play particularly well till the second half. So all that, but everybody's talking about Curaçao today, so I mean, let's start there. I thought that it was one of the more poor U.S. performances that we've seen really since Cuba. Obviously, this one's a little more concerning because it's in a competitive game. But the U.S. were really on the back foot most of the game. I thought they didn't pressure the ball effectively at all. They're very out of sync defensively, which gets back to something I think on the last show I was on. I was like, you know, goal number one should be hard to play against again. And like the U.S. really weren't. Like you saw how easy it was for Curaçao to just move the ball right up the field. Nobody but Michael really shows for the ball in possession. That includes Weston McKennie. I know it's kind of sacrilege to criticize Weston right now, but it's just true. It's just very reactive football. I think, Matt Tomaszewicz, Shin Guardian, had a great tweet last night. It was like, I think the U.S. is playing the prevent defense. Where, like, they're so concerned with not getting beat on the counter that they forgot to play football in a lot of ways. And that was really disappointing to see. So I'm not going to hammer them over this game until I see how they perform against Jamaica in the semifinal. But certainly that's not the most encouraging way to start a knockout round.
Well, what we could actually talk about, at least in this Gold Cup, has been, you know, you would say kind of the emergence of other teams that, you know, were not expected to do well. I mean, yes, we know how talented Curaçao is, but, you know, for lack of a better word, they are up and coming, but they're not exactly world beaters
right. On
the CONCACAF stage. However, one thing that we do want to talk about, obviously this goes to my next segment in regards to the personal highlight of the tournament so far. You know, obviously we have seen, you know, a lot of goals, 90 goals scored in 28 games. We have our top goal scorer, Jonathan David, 6 goals. And he's, 19 years old? So that's a great thing for him to show off. But obviously, we have to talk about the team that beat his team, and that's Haiti, you know, getting a remarkable 3-2 comeback win and coming from 2-0 down to win 3-2 in Houston. I mean, is that the personal highlight of the tournament so far, Neil? Or if not, what has really stand out from this Gold Cup, in your opinion?
I think Haiti is one of the best stories of the summer of soccer. I mean, you could Copa America, Gold Cup, Women's World Cup, Cup of Nations, Madagascar's right there with them in that tournament. But it's just remarkable what Marc Collat's squad has done. And, you know, two things about it. One, they're less than a decade removed from the entire country's infrastructure basically being destroyed, including obviously the soccer infrastructure. And the other thing is there's this narrative that's been spun a little bit that, well, it's been easier for Haiti because of the emergence of MLS and the rise of a more stable USL. But none of that's really true. Like essentially what they're doing is, you know, I mean, yeah, they've got a guy that their most capped guy plays for El Paso Locomotive and was with Meshach Jerome, who's with Orlando City, and American soccer fans are going to be familiar with him. And we know Derek Etienne. But, you know, a lot of these players are like just guys that are applying their trade in the lower divisions in France and Europe. And so, you know, it's nobody you really ever heard of. So to be able to do this, I mean, their captain doesn't have a club. So to be able to do this is pretty astounding. And I just think, you know, if you saw some of the pictures, if listeners haven't seen some of the images of the Haitian people dancing in the streets and some of that, it's a really, for me, it was a really salient reminder that like this tournament is a regional championship that matters to a lot of people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think the demonstration, the celebration that we saw in Port-au-Prince really demonstrate how much that cares to a lot of people who, you know, in a way, like you said, you know, they're a year removed off of essentially their infrastructure being destroyed, due to the earthquake. But for this to kind of unite the nation in a way is remarkable. But obviously, now comes the big test, and would probably be one of the biggest shocks in CONCACAF history if it is done. It's Haiti against Mexico tomorrow in Glendale. Joe, I'll go to you first because, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how Mexico deal in this kind of tournament. You know, they're coming off with a new coach who, ironically, is suspended for this game, Tata Martino. But I think in true CONCACAF fashion that anything is possible. But looking at Mexico so far, I mean, they've essentially, I would say, wiped the floor in the group stage. 13 goals scored, 3 against, won all 3 games. Had a really tough game against Costa Rica back in Houston, only to win by penalties. But I don't know. I mean, do you feel that Mexico is being posed of a challenge with Haiti, or do you feel like this is just going to be more straightforward of what we've been accustomed to with Mexico in previous tournaments?
Well, you would anticipate it to be straightforward, but if you look at their last couple of results, I mean, 3-2 against Martinique. Obviously, Martinique gets a couple of goals there, but you know, you look at it, it was 1-1 into the 60th minute on this match. So Martinique obviously gives them a little bit of a challenge, you know, although that was one way. The scoreboard says a little differently. Then you go to this penalty shootout against Costa Rica, you know, and arguably a Costa Rica side that doesn't have all the bits and pieces that they would normally have, but still a formidable side. Mexico gets taken to penalties in Houston, which is practically a home game for Mexico. Now you've got this upstart Haiti side who has not lost. Okay, they haven't lost a match the entire tournament so far. They're, you know, so you look at this, and I think Haiti also coming on the heels of a massive comeback win against Canada with two late goals, with a couple of late goals here, the penalty in the 70th minute, and then Grier scoring in the 76th, a huge comeback for them. So I think you've got a couple of teams, one that's riding high and some momentum. Mexico, though, obviously being challenged and kind of punched in the face a little bit in their last two matches. And you've got to think that maybe there could be a little bit more of a game in this one than one would think.
Absolutely, Neil. I mean, do you think Mexico are going to be a bit too overconfident, or do you think that Haiti should be much more confident heading into this game?
Well, I mean, I think that Haiti played Chile in a friendly at the beginning of the month or last month. Now it's July, right? And so they've seen, you know, Tata Martino's team plays a little bit differently, but they've seen that high press. They played pretty well too. I mean, it was 2-1 game, and a tight game. Haiti's 9-3 in the last year. They played one game at home, which they won 13-0. No word on whether or not Twitter decided that they didn't celebrate properly while scoring 13 goals. I can't confirm or deny that. But, like Joe said, I mean, they've won every game. And it's always touch and go when your manager is gone. So I think, you know, I don't want to say that it's like, you know, certainly I don't expect them to win. But, you know, Memo Ochoa basically makes a brilliant save, or it's Costa Rica and Haiti, and we're probably talking about, like, hey, is it actually possible for Haiti to get to the final, and then if they get Jamaica, win the Gold Cup?
you know, Memo was canonized yesterday in Mexico. I don't know if you heard about that.
As he should be.
But, that would be one hell of a final, Jamaica-Haiti. I mean, that right now, Fox Sports is probably cringing at the idea that it's a Jamaica-Haiti final. But there's a possibility there. I want to run over to the Jamaica-U.S. game. Before we start talking about the U.S., because I know we're going to have a lot to unpackage there, let's look at Jamaica quickly. Obviously, in the group stage, they only had one win, two draws in, a draw against El Salvador and Curaçao, who drew them late. And they needed that late draw to get them into the knockout round. The one win against Honduras was actually a home win. It was played in Kingston. Since then, obviously, the 1-0 victory over Panama and Philadelphia yesterday. What do you think of this Jamaica team, Neil? Has this team impressed you at all, or are there still questions being asked?
They defend well.
Yeah?
I mean, I think all the way more teams have kind of, you know, well, and Winnie Schaefer's teams, too. I mean, Jamaica defends well. I don't know. I just don't think that they've gotten any more dynamic in terms of their ability to attack. In fact, you know, you could maybe make the argument that they're not quite as good as some of the usual pieces that you relied on in the midfield have kind of aged. But, you know, Darren Maddox is playing well, for them at least. You know, I just don't know. I don't know if they have enough in attack to really challenge the U.S. in the way that would concern me. But then again, you know, I kind of thought that in 2015, too, and was wrong. And I think you could argue, at least, that 2015 U.S. team was a stronger side. Mm-hmm. And that this Jamaica side, other than Wes Morgan retiring from international football, is, you know, I think it's pretty much a wash. So, you know, didn't really answer your question, but I think Jamaica knows they can beat the U.S. They beat them in 2015. They beat them in a friendly last month where the U.S. played a pretty good team. They played them tightly over the years in World Cup qualifying. They will not be afraid of the United States. And Obviously, they have a team full of players that play in America, so they're familiar with their opponent, and I do think that they defend well.
So Rob, I want to come to you with the next one, and so I'm going to start with the U.S., and Neil, I'm going to give you a chance to jump in on this one, because this one is just bouncing around in my head. The U.S. have not conceded a goal so far this tournament. I believe they've scored 13. I've got to just check the math, but they haven't conceded a goal as of yet. Jesse Zardes leads all goal scorers for the U.S. men's national team right now with 3 goals in this tournament. And if you ask the Twitterverse, he's probably not even the 5th best striker, American striker in the world right now. You know, Nia. So, Rob, I'm going to come to you first. Is Greg Berhalter justified in running Jesse Zardes out there day in and day out?
Well, I actually want to take before I get to my answer, I actually want to get to a tweet that Neil said, I think last night, that 23 years from now, the F pool of the U.S. is a dude on a relegation battle in England, a 27-year-old with 2 repaired ACLs, a 17-year-old FC Dallas prospect who wants to play for Mexico, a talented kid the manager doesn't rate who plays in Germany at a good club, and Jesse Zardes who starts.
And that's why I wanted you to go first over Neil.
Look, I mean, listen, I'm going to admit I'm not the biggest Jesse Zardes fan. I think I would still put Altidore in front of him just because of – I think he just impresses me a bit more. But when you're on this type of form, I mean, you're kind of hoped to start him. But I think if I'm Berhalter, I wouldn't, just because, you know, this Jamaica team defends very, very well. And trying to get a player that is able to be more faster and have more control of the ball, I think Altidore provides that a bit more than Zardes, which is surprising in a way, but I think it's the best that you can do at this point. It's going to be very tough, and I think if the United States played like they did against Curacao, Jamaica are going to, and they should, and like Neil said, they're completely right. They have beaten the United States before. They shouldn't be afraid to beat them again as they've done in the past. They obviously are confident in that way that they can do it. So, you know, they have nothing to lose. I mean, for them, it would be great for them to go back to a final. But for the United States, when people are looking at this tournament as not serious, I think that's the big problem that's happening. It's not – when you haven't played a competitive game in almost 2 years and you view this CONCACAF Gold Cup as not just irrelevant but just, you know, just a walk away – you know, that's the right word, but just using it as like experience, like, no, this is a continental tournament. And when you look at countries like Haiti, for example, who are celebrating on the streets, obviously two different forms of passion in the soccer sphere, but it's an important tournament. It's for them to build themselves off into hopefully a team that is ready to fight for World Cup qualifying. The United States have it tough, don't they? They really do.
Yeah, I mean, look, the U.S. have been outplayed since 2015 in Gold Cups. The U.S. have been outplayed by Haiti. They've been outplayed to some extent by Martinique. They've been, Mexico certainly was scared by them too. They've certainly been outplayed by Honduras. In 2015, they were outplayed by Panama twice. Mm-hmm. They find ways to win, which is good. But the U.S., the point I'm making is that the U.S. is, and then of course the U.S. finished 5th in the hex. So the U.S. is really in no position to play the kids in CONCACAF. Like, they need to have the senior team figure out how to win CONCACAF again. And I think that's a point that's just been totally lost by people. In terms of Zardes, I mean, yeah, I rate Altidore higher too, Rob, because I feel like the U.S. needs a bunch of guys, at least 3 or 4 more guys that can at least put some pressure on the ball in a coordinated fashion. Mm-hmm. And Altidore seems to me to be like the guy in the forward pool, other than maybe Bobby Wood, who does that best, at least at this point. Josh Sargent probably will, and hopefully that's soon. Get club minutes, Josh. But that's kind of where I'm at on that. And so, the U.S. should be taking this seriously. The semifinals is a great chance for them to play better. And they didn't play well in the quarterfinal, and in a lot of ways were outplayed by Curacao. And so, you know, it's time to do it. And really, the U.S. are only missing if Altidore's healthy, does he start? Maybe. So really, you're missing Tyler Adams and John Brooks are like your surefire starters that aren't here. So when people are like, well, this isn't the best U.S. team. Well, it kind of is.
So
play better.
I would add 2 more names to that. For me, DeAndre Yedlin. I would add his name.
Sure.
And for me, from what
I don't know
I've
if Bearhalter agrees with you.
Well, yeah, of course, because, you know, we need a whole show for that topic, please.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For me, I would also, Anthony Robinson, I think, is another guy that I would prefer to see out there. I can't wrap my head around why Greg Berhalter continues to play Tyler Adams as a right back. That drives me absolutely bananas. You almost, and the same thing even with Christian Pulisic, you almost want to take some film and go, Greg, go watch what they do in Germany. Go watch what they do for their club teams. Just put it over here, okay? Change their jerseys and have them do that over here, and you'll be okay.
Well, you saw a marvelous argument last night for why Adams should be playing in the center of the field, right? I mean, the U.S. was out of sync defensively. They needed that guy who could help with defensive coverage, who reads angles well, who's capable of getting interceptions that lead to tempo opportunities, right? He's also a guy that can break lines as a passer and then kind of pull a team that's sitting deep and waiting to counter out. So if he's a right back, he's just not going to be able to do that. And, like, you know, the U.S. needs someone other than Michael that shows for the ball consistently and that is comfortable when the opposing team puts the U.S. under pressure. And if you're not going to make it Tyler Adams, you have to think about calling in a Danny Williams. You have to think about calling in a Darlington Nagbe. Because you got to get somebody that can carry the ball out from the back, or show for the ball.
But ultimately, he is that guy. Tyler Adams is definitely that guy.
Yeah, well, it's definitely Tyler Adams. Yeah. But if you're, you know, one question always leads to another, right?
True, very true. So to wrap things up for the Gold Cup, you know, given the given who you predicted, given the semifinalists that we have, who is your predicted champion of this tournament now, and does it jive with who you originally picked at the beginning of the tournament?
Let's see. I picked a Mexico Jamaica final, so I'm going to stick with that.
All right, you're still on path, and Mexico is the winner.
You know what? Three straight finals. I'm going to go third time a charm for the Reggae Boys.
Ooh, that's big.
I like the idea, and there's really no basis in reality for me, other than like, I just love the Theodore Whitmore said, you know, if we don't win this time, it's a failure. Like, I love that that's the way that Jamaica's approaching the tournament. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's potential, like I said, the cringe factor of Haiti, Jamaica for Fox Sports is there, which I would love to see.
Oh, we'd love it. I'd love it. Hell yeah. In Chicago as well. Oh, man.
Yeah, it would be awesome. But they did announce that it was sold out today, so I think they do have that going for them. So, Neil, I want to thank you for joining us. Before we let you go, where can everybody find you and the Yanks Are Coming?
Yeah, thanks, guys. You can find me on Twitter at NWBlackman, BlackMon. And check us out, www.yanksarecoming.com. A lot of Women's World Cup stuff because we were over there. But we're kind of swinging back into the Gold Cup swing of things here.
And before I let you go, and you know, because you bring up a great point, because you have been tweeting a lot of Women's World Cup. And you know, to be a little off topic, because Jesse's right in the wings waiting for us. U.S. win this thing, or England knock them off the perch this week?
Whoever wins tomorrow.
Yeah,
Whoever wins tomorrow is going to win. And I wrote a column about the Netherlands and why they're really good. They can't. I don't think they beat either of these teams.
No, I agree. Neil, thanks again for joining us, man, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys. Bye bye.
Thank you so much.
And that was Neil Blackman from theyanksarecoming.com. I want to hurry up and just move things along here because I think we're going really, really well. So let me see if we can get our next guest into the call and add her in. So we're going to switch gears from our continental tournament here to easily or arguably the biggest tournament that we've got going on in the world right now, the Women's World Cup.
Really?
Yep.
Really?
Normally our next guest I would introduce as Diego Forlán's number one fan. But I think Megan Rapinoe may have supplanted him. It's Jesse Loge from Unusual Efforts. Jesse, what's going on?
You guys, I'm very sad about VAR.
Same. I agree. Same.
I know. What happened?
But think of all the calls they would be missing.
No.
Okay, fair enough.
No.
You're not going to win with the two of us on that one.
No, and I'm not going to try. So let's jump into it because, I mean, for me, I've got to be honest with you, full confession. I've watched Copa America. I've watched plenty of Copa America. I've watched plenty of the Gold Cup. I've watched plenty of the FIFA Women's World Cup so far over the last few weeks, to my family's chagrin, right? Because I'm always commandeering the television. The quality of play in the women's game right now, for me, there are moments where it feels like it is the best quality of play of all three tournaments. It has been fantastic in some instances. A lot of nice, pretty attacking football that you know is there with style. We've seen a bunch of teams do it very, very well. We've seen the grittiness of some of these teams as well. Some of these matches have been much more physical than I expected. So, Jesse, you know, just going over to you, what are your impressions of this tournament so far?
I mean, it's scientific fact that it's the best tournament of all of them. Joe. I think you're right. I, you know, as somebody who is taking under duress a biostatistics class at this moment, I can tell you what are some math terms I know. It's, you know, many standard deviations away. I am so making this shit up. Can I say that?
Absolutely.
Great.
Yeah, you're all good. Don't worry about
it. It's many standard deviations away from all the rest of them. That sounded like I knew what I was talking about, right?
That's statistically correct.
Okay. Great. Okay. No, it's so for me, it's been the quality of play has been so much better, I think, than the other tournaments that have been happening so far. But also, I think in terms of previous World Cups, we've seen really a development, and that's been a real thrill to see.
You know, Jesse, I mean, I'll just jump in because I think there's a lot of storylines to really go into Women's World Cup. I mean, we've seen the home support from the French. We can go into perhaps the wonderful statement that Marta made after getting eliminated by France in the round of 16. We see the wonderful story that is Argentina and Argentina's side that has basically got no support whatsoever, but ended up getting two draws against Japan and Scotland. We see the free-flowing United States side into the semifinals. We see the European champions also as well. I mean, we see the Italians doing well. I mean, there's so much to really just digest. But for you, Jesse, what has been the tournament highlight for you so far on a personal level?
Oh, I think on a personal level, it's really everything you've said. It's seeing what it means to every single one of these players and teams. You know, for me, did I ever think I would want any Argentinian team to do well? No. And I found myself, you know, in tears watching these women fight and sweat, you know, knowing that they came off, they had death threats, you know, they sued their FAs, they had no manager, they were getting changed on buses, you know, they really fought for every step to get there was a fight, and here they are in France, and they're, you know, you saw them weeping on the pitch after that first draw, that's what it meant to them, and so, you know, Thailand, you know, after that brutal loss, you know, when they came back and scored that goal, that meant so much to them. So they really are fighting for so much more than a win. They're fighting for the future of their individual teams, and they're fighting for the future of female football.
Right. No, absolutely. And I think that's been so impressive as well. I mean, Joe, I mean, I guess I'll jump in as well to you. I mean, what does really stand out for you at this Women's World Cup? I mean, there's so many there's a lot to digest, but what has impressed you so far this Women's World Cup?
The quality of play overall amongst the teams, for me, I think has been the most impressive thing that I've seen. And you want to attribute it to, especially in Europe, because you saw at the quarterfinal stage, we had seven European teams and the United States, right? So for me, that you look back and say, why did that happen? And you saw some teams. You saw Italy, you know, playing, you know, incredibly well. First time they've been there in 20 years. It's the investment that's starting to be made by these club teams into the women's game that I think has started to really turn the corner for some of these women's teams. And in all honesty, as an American fan, I'm looking at this World Cup as like, you know what? This is going to be, if they do manage to win it, this is going to be the last easy one. There are no easy ones after this one because Italy's going to get better. Germany's going to get better. France is already on the cusp. I mean, if not there, everyone talks about that round of 16 match as the World Cup final before the World Cup final. You know, Spain is going to get better. Real Madrid now are going to invest in a women's team and have already have a transfer budget, you know, allotted for them. I think we're going to see this game grow, and I think you're seeing it right now at the beginning level of that growth, where these teams are just, they're improving, you know, so much, and the quality of play is visible on the pitch that I think this game in 4 years, when we come back to the 2021 World Cup, you're going to see, for me, a different game. I think you're going to see an even better quality game, and you're going to see a lot of different teams fight for it. You're not going to see the 13-0 Thailand result. I don't think that result will exist ever again in this game. I think from this point on, I think the teams will be so well matched and so tightly competitive that I think we're going to see something more resembling the Men's World Cup in terms of its overall competition top to bottom. And for me, that was the best thing that I've seen out of this tournament, is to see how great that quality has come along year after year after year. And to see a path forward for it, I think for me is definitely special.
Absolutely.
That's a great point. I also want to point out the goalkeeping of this tournament across the board.
Absolutely.
Has been, astounding. It's just, I don't even know who to point out, but from, you know, Sydney Schneider, who is a tiny baby at 19 years old, like, I just don't even know what I've been doing with my own life, but you know, Vanina Correa in Argentina, literally everyone, you know, there's not been one match, I think, that hasn't had a superb moment in the net from a keeper.
I'm looking her up right now because I can't remember her name. Oh, Christiane Endler.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Of all of them.
Seriously.
The one.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. I was getting texts from my father saying, are we allowed to like her? Yes. I mean, I think South American-ness has been like breached in this World Cup.
And to my
borders are crossed.
And to my point, she's the goalkeeper at PSG. So to my point,
but look, to your point, look what happens when you do put development behind a team.
Yeah, absolutely.
100%. So now looking into, obviously, the first semifinal, I think when you look at a kind of a tale of two teams, really, you look at England as a side that, you know, only conceded one goal and won all of their games. And you look at the United States side who, you know, did, obviously, we can't compare the game against Thailand, but, you know, 3-0 against Chile, 2-0 against Sweden, and then close games against Spain and France. I mean, Jesse, I mean, this has got to be the toughest game that the United States has had so far in this Women's World Cup. I mean, you know, do you think that it will be a tough game, but the United States will end up grinding through, or does England pull off the, you know, quote unquote shock tomorrow?
I think if England pull off the shock, it is going to come down to the net. It's going to come down to Alyssa Nayer, who's had a little bit of, you know, I won't even say growing pains. You know, this is, she's very lucky in who she has in front of her, and this is very new to her. So she has to continue in the path that she has been doing, which is just getting better. But that's not easy to do. So, you know, Lucy Bronze is incredible. And I think that if Bronze can breach the defense, then Nayer doesn't really have much of a chance. But I do see the U.S. taking this one.
Yeah, I agree as well. And, you know, you think back, just to kind of further that point a little bit, for the U.S. Women's national team, over the past, I want to say 20 years, their goalkeepers have been Brianna Scurry, Hope Solo, Alyssa Nayer. And that's it. That's been the entire list for all those years. So it's been tough for Alyssa to, you know, because she's 31 years old, to really get in when you've got Brianna Scurry, you know, players like Brianna Scurry and Hope Solo in front of you. I mean, who are probably, you know, they're top goalkeepers on any team in the world for the women's game. You know, you've got to feel for her a little bit, just being, you know, in a situation where you've got that greatness in front of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so I mean, in the end, I think you're right. I think it could come down to something like that, but we've also seen defensively, we've seen this team play so well. And again, for me, I think when we did our Women's World Cup preview, we talked about Julie Ertz for me as one of the major, major pieces. I mean, everyone's going to want...
You guys, in America, we call her Zach Ertz's wife. I don't know if you've seen
the headlines. No. Yeah. No, we call Zach Ertz Julie Ertz's husband.
I had no idea who he was, and I had to look up, what team does he play on?
Whatever team he plays on,
I had no idea what sport that was. I will fully, freely confess that when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's so nice. He plays a sport. What a fun family. And then that was a Google search for me.
You know, I'm just to give you a little more, I'm a Cowboys fan. So it is really hard for me to root for anybody with the last name of Ertz. Okay, because he plays for my team's bitter rivals in the Philadelphia Eagles.
That is that's football, right? Yeah. That's the other football?
American. Yeah.
Okay, I got it. Yeah. I did the Google.
So, but at the same time, I mean, Julie Ertz has just been an absolute force. Yeah, and defensively.
I know this is not what we're talking about, but every time I've seen her play live, I feel like I have to apologize to her because she gets brutally hurt, like wipes blood off her face, and no one comes. I just have such an issue with concussion protocol not being followed. Like, mm-hmm. It's all over my Twitter feed is like, just follow effing concussion protocol. And Julie Ertz is such a case where she will, you know, get bashed in the face, smear blood off, and just keep going. Yeah. And yes, that's great, but it's also an issue. It means that nobody is checking to see that she's fine.
Oh, you're bringing up a whole nother issue that a whole nother podcast is needed for. I mean,
yes, put that on the list.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to do that one of these days for sure. I mean, we've kind of done it a little bit in the past, Rob, but I would agree with you that I think a lot of these, and it leads to what I said earlier, the grittiness of the game, the women's game, the toughness or the physicality of the women's game has really come through in this tournament, maybe to a level that, you know, somebody should be following concussion protocol because
someone anywhere, any league, just give me one league, one team who is following. I would be happy.
It would be nice because we've seen a lot of people lose their careers over it. So,
yeah. Speaking of Brianna Scurry.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah, no doubt about it. So I'm going to jump off of the U.S. game for a second. I'm going to jump to the other game because, you know, there are two other teams playing in this tournament that are left and two dynamic teams. Obviously, the Netherlands and Sweden. The Netherlands getting there by going perfect through Group E with Canada and Cameroon and only allowing two goals, defeating Japan 2-1 and defeating Italy 2-0, breaking my heart. And on the other side was Sweden, second in Group F to the U.S. And, you know, and their only loss was to the United States. They scored 7 goals in the group stages, then defeated Canada 1-0, and on a comeback beat Germany 2-1, you know, one of the other quote-unquote favorites of this tournament. So, you know, another little fact as I was doing my research for the show, Viviane Miedema, who's the goal...
amazing.
She's leading the Dutch in goal scoring right now. Did you know that she is the top goal scorer for the Netherlands, both men or women? Robin Van Persie leads the men with 50 goals in his career, and Viedema has 60.
And she's only 22.
I know. I actually did know both of those things, and one of those things makes me nauseous.
Yeah, I know, right? Now, the other thing, you know, looking on the other side, Fridolina Rolfo is for Sweden is going to be out of this tournament due to yellow card suspension. She's going to miss the semifinal here. So how does that affect Sweden? You know, obviously they've been relying on Blake Stenius I'm going to mess up her name, Aslani for their goals. Yep.
Kosovari Aslani.
Who have scored 2 goals each. How does this matchup shape up for you?
I mean, if you saw that first goal, Aslani to Blake Stenius is like, you know, guys, I don't know what's wrong with me. I was literally going to say sex on a stick because it's Monday night and I am tired. And I apologize to everybody listening, but like nothing was prettier than that perfectly weighted pass and goal. It was just, it's like they have radar for each other. So I think that something that the Swedish team has in common with the US is that they have a very deep bench. And I think that, you know, fresh legs are not a terrible thing when you're getting this far, that maybe pulling somebody in who is possibly very excited to get their shot is not a bad thing. You know, we saw it totally different, but we saw it with Carly Lloyd, who just seemed to want that goal so badly. You know, Sweden has that. Sweden has that ability to pull somebody off the bench who's just going to really want to get on there and get in and score this World Cup goal. So I think having that sort of weight in the middle of Aslani and Blaksenius, who know what they're doing, who have been playing, who are so good together, and then pulling somebody in for Rolfo, who can sort of, you know, bring a little fresh energy and excitement, maybe is a good thing, and who is going to keep the opponents on their toes because it's somebody who hasn't been seen before. I don't know. But that's sort of a thought.
So let me ask you this. I'm gonna ask you the question one way, but then I'm gonna ask you a different way. Given the semifinalists that we have, do you still hold to your pre-tournament prediction of who would win this World Cup?
Did I predict? Who did I say? Was I right?
No, we didn't even ask you. So I'm
good because you know I hate predicting, but I think it's the U.S. I'm going with it.
So now the second way I want to rephrase that is: are we looking at a possible group stage rematch between the U.S. and Sweden for the final?
Yes, you guys. Yes, let's say that.
I'll disagree. I want the Netherlands. I like their team, and you know, Lekki Martens is so cool, and I want action. She's the European champion. I'd like to see that. Defending champion against European champion. I think that's just a demonstration.
I don't want anybody to lose, though. Like, every time anybody loses, it's like the opposite of how I feel about the Men's World Cup. Like, I'm just sad every time somebody loses.
Like Argentina.
Except if it's Uruguay. Then you become sad.
No, like, but in the Women's World Cup, I'm like, oh, I'm going to miss you guys. Oh, I don't want you to go.
Right.
But with the men, I'm like, ugh, everyone else can lose except for Uruguay.
Except Argentina, right? I'm sorry.
The men? They don't even exist for me. With the Copa America right now, I'm like, I don't want anybody to. I guess I'm Peru. I don't know.
Go Chile. I'm joking.
Oh, I have to go.
Jesse, always a pleasure to talk to you. And what's great
is
that.
You guys are the best.
You know, and the thing is that we think about it. Rob and I, we did that huge series for Copa America, and you are our Uruguay expert. Here we are, Women's World Cup. I mean, is there anything you don't cover?
Math.
Okay.
I think we can all agree on that and be on that boat.
Yeah, amen. Yeah. So, again,
yeah, if anybody wants to join that boat and do this homework for me, I'd be thrilled.
Babe, before we let you get back to that, where can everyone find you?
Jesse Loesch. I was going to say, on my couch suffering over this homework, but at Jesse Loesch.
Fantastic. Jesse, thanks again. We always look forward to speaking with you, and it's always a pleasure, and talk soon.
You too. Thank you guys so much for everything.
Have a good night.
Bye.
And that was Jesse Lowe. She's awesome. She's one of our favorites. And always great to talk to. So let's continue this, because obviously we've covered both U.S. tournaments, right? We've covered the Gold Cup. We've covered the Women's World Cup, but let's get down to South America now, because, let's get Simon Edwards in here. We did have the chance to record him last night, and we had a fantastic interview with him. So, we're going to get to our Copa America preview and, Simon Edwards, Simon Edwards. So, but without further ado,
joining us now on Low Limit Football from World Football Index, Mr. Simon Edwards. Simon, how are you tonight?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks. Fantastic. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thanks again for joining us. Let's jump into the Copa America here quickly as we approach the semifinals starting on Tuesday. And I'd like to get your impressions of the tournament so far.
Yeah, I mean, I've really enjoyed it. I think I've watched pretty much every game, and I don't even get that done for World Cups at times. So particularly with the timing in the afternoon, in the evening, it's been something I've enjoyed doing pretty much every day. The football has been of a mixed quality, but it's always been interesting, even when it hasn't been great. So, I've really enjoyed the narratives and some of the games. And, it's been fun.
You know, looking into, and obviously I could echo your statements there, Simon, having, you know, been there in Brazil, obviously, in comparison to three games, in comparison to 22 games that have been played, what I've been able to see has been fascinating so far. You know, 48 goals, perhaps a bit of controversy when it comes to, you know, the attendance of the games, and that makes total sense given the fact that the prices are relatively very expensive for the average Brazilian citizen. You know, you also have a bit of the controversy with VAR. That there's always skewed controversy ever since making its, debut on an international stage in the World Cup. But, you know, having looked at, you know, some of the, perhaps the goals that we've seen, the players that have stand out, you know, the moments, I think the most famous one, I think, that I can remember that is so South American in extent was the delayed start between Colombia and Chile a couple days ago. So it really has been quite an interesting tournament. But for you, Simon, on a personal level, what has been the personal highlight of the tournament so far for you, be it a player, a moment, a goal, whatever it may be? What stands out to you so far in this Copa?
Yeah, well, I think an overall theme, just kind of bridging between the two questions, has been that everyone can pretty much beat everyone else. There have been games, obviously, where teams have eventually run away with it, but it's been clear that, you know, even maybe perhaps the sides with the less big names can put up a good defensive display and make it difficult for some of the established powers. So I think it's going to bode very well for the qualifying for the next World Cup. I don't think there's going to be any easy games moving forward. In terms of individual moments, you know, I've really enjoyed some of the defensive displays. Obviously, people come for the goals, and we love some goals, of course. But some of the very, you know, impressive organization in certain games, and, you know, Paraguay, for example, against Brazil, I really enjoyed. I think Paraguay set out quite offensively to begin with, and then they adapted once they went down to 10 men and they stayed in the game. We've seen similar things from Venezuela. Even Bolivia at times have shown some good defensive work. So I think that's been an interesting theme of the tournament. Perhaps the sides with less star-studded rosters and squads finding a way to stay competitive, which is something we see a lot in South America. Even if you're maybe not going to play the best football, you're going to make it very difficult. And I think that's been very interesting to see.
No, absolutely. You know, Joe, I mean, you know, repeating the echoing what Simon had said, you know, you look at some of the defensive performances, and, you know, some people want to criticize that because, you know, people want to see goals. But, you know, with that, you also have the standout players like that have been standing out so far and scoring goals. You know, you have Lautaro Martinez, you have Everton Cebolla, yeah, I think that's called, the player at Brazil. I mean, what has stand out to you so far, having watched the Copa America heading into the semifinals?
You know, I want to echo what Simon said, because the defensive displays have been incredible for me. You look no farther than Argentina, only scoring 5 goals in 4 matches. They've been very, very strong, you know, in terms of that regard. Paraguay, like Simon also said, going down to 10 men against Brazil and just having the intestinal fortitude to take that all the way to penalties was just, you know, incredible to watch. I mean, they did it. It's been very physical in some instances. You know, you've seen some very, very good play. Also, I guess if you want to think about it, the run that Chile has made, I think, has been really impressive to me. This is a team that didn't qualify for the World Cup just last year, and now here we are looking at them, and they're right back where we expect them to be in the Copa America, and that's in the semifinal, a semifinal that they're probably going to be favored in, challenging for that title, and would be the third in a row, which would be unbelievable. So I think those are kind of the storylines for me that I've witnessed watching this Copa America, which has been a great tournament for me.
Definitely, I agree. And now we have 2 big rivalries at stake here in South America, probably when all is said and done, probably 2 of the top 5 most bitter rivalries in all of South America, and perhaps all Latin America as well, if we go that further. But let's start with the big one. It's Brazil against Argentina. Obviously, we kind of have to look at this stage a couple years ago. Estadio Mineirao, Belo Horizonte, obviously familiar territory for Brazil, in a bad way, of course, losing 7-1 to Germany back in the World Cup 5 years ago. And then you have an Argentina side who, you know, came into this tournament with a little bit of low expectations, to say the least. I mean, yeah, it has been kind of a roller coaster start when you look at the first 2 games, losing to Colombia and then drawing Paraguay. To get the axe really quickly if they got an early elimination. But having said that, they're now into a semifinal against probably their biggest rival ever. And you have a Brazil side who is, you know, in comparison perhaps against the first game against Bolivia and then against Peru, has tried to convince some people, but is not to the level of expectation that they should be. You know, being on home soil, being absent has been really, really big for this Brazil side. But, you know, Simon, I mean, looking into this game real quick, I mean, it's kind of much closer than one would expect, don't you think? I think you have two sides who are in kind of similar situations, but just it kind of has to be said that you want to have to look at Argentina as kind of the underdog in this semifinal, don't you think?
I would think so. I mean, Brazil, if you look at the games they played, they found it most difficult against teams that are very organized defensively, that are disciplined, that, you know, can get behind the ball, can sit deep and counterattack. And that isn't Argentina, to be honest. The one team that went at Brazil a little bit more was Peru, and that ended up with a 5-0 Brazil win. That was the only game where Brazil looked particularly comfortable in attacking. Obviously, they got 3 goals against Bolivia, but they couldn't score until they got that fortuitous penalty. So Brazil so far have really struggled against organized, deep, compact defenses, and Argentina definitely can't offer that. I mean, Argentina's best form. I think it will be interesting, but I definitely do think make Brazil favorites for this one, just because I think Argentina are going to attack more than the teams that Brazil have struggled against. And I think particularly out wide, Everton getting forward. And I've really liked Coutinho and Arthur I think for Brazil, the issue is when they face a defence that's deep and compact, they haven't had anyone in the box. Firmino is good, but he's much more effective when he's linking in a fluid attacking three with Liverpool than he is when he's the furthest man forward for Brazil. So I like Lautaro, Aguero and Messi for Argentina. I mean, obviously. But I think they kind of lack a bit in midfield and quite a lot in defence. So I think Brazil could get a good win here just because I think Argentina will be so open for those Brazilian counterattacks.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Joe, I mean, I'll jump into you and I want your thoughts on this semifinal. You know, do you see it as probably not as straightforward as Brazil would want it to be, but definitely favored into more of the host?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and this is, if you look at the tournament for both of these teams, it hasn't gone quite exactly the way they wanted to. The struggle against Paraguay for Brazil. You look at Argentina with a 2-0 over Venezuela, which was really against the grain because Venezuela was playing such wonderful football. Even when you look back on their final matchup in their group stage in Group A, with the 3-1 win over Bolivia, they were just, you know, they were dominant in that performance. And to come back and to, you know, to suffer the defeat that they did in the quarterfinals, it was kind of against the grain. So I think this tournament hasn't gone exactly the way they would have liked, but I think you've got to look at Brazil as the favorite in this match strictly because you're playing at home. You've got to favor Brazil there. Argentina never has really looked like they've gotten it all running together. Like Simon, like you said, Aguero, Messi, I just lost the last player, but the three of them playing up top.
Lautaro Martinez.
Thank you, Lautaro. That's right. The three of them have looked the best, even when they've tried to integrate other players into the match. But, you know, you wonder which Argentina is going to show up, which Brazil is going to show up, but you'd have to favor Brazil in this particular matchup on July 2nd. Let's fast forward now and jump into July 3rd with another Clásico in South America with Chile-Peru. You know, two teams, Peru on penalties getting past Uruguay and Chile on penalties as well, 5-4 in both matches, getting past Colombia, two teams that I would say we would have expected to be favorites to win this tournament in Colombia and Uruguay have been knocked off by these two teams. Teams that, you know, with Peru, although they got to the World Cup, did not have the greatest of performances. I think it was a team that was just happy to get there. With Chile, they didn't even get to travel to Russia last year. So, you know, I would say that this matchup is a little more unexpected compared to the Brazil-Argentina matchup. What, Simon, what are your impressions of this Chile-Peru? How do you think this one will play out?
Well, I think it's interesting with the Copa America, with a short tournament, how quickly kind of the transition development process is sped up. You know, we can have a year of friendlies and we won't really know where the teams are. But in a short tournament, suddenly everything falls together or falls apart. Mm-hmm. With Ecuador, it fell apart. With Chile, it's really come together very quickly. You know, 3 months ago, we had no idea what this Chile side would look like. And now it's like they've been playing together for years. And mm-hmm. they kind of have, but it's a system that's now really working. I think with Chile, what's key is the three central midfielders, Aranjuez, Vidal and Pulgar, who's been one of the breakout stars for this tournament, playing in Italy, but not a player who'd been important for Chile, but now he's key. So I think that central midfield battle, those three up against the Peruvian Jotun and Tapia, is going to be very, very important. I think Peru have pace out wide. Avanculo coming from fullback, Carrillo, Flores, with Guerrero up top. If they can get deliveries into the box, I think that's a potential weakness for Chile. Their defence isn't particularly tall. So I think it's going to be a case of Chile looking to control the midfield. Alexis Sanchez, who's looked better, offering up top alongside getting close to Vargas. Whereas for Peru, I think they'll try and compete and limit Pulgar and Aranjuez in their playmaking work in the middle with the Jotun and Tapia, and then getting the ball wide and getting deliveries into the box with Cueva trying to create something as well. So it's going to be an interesting game. I think Chile are organised and experienced and tough, and they have some good classy midfielders, whereas I think Peru look a little bit less secure. Obviously a good result 0-0 against Uruguay, but they do have the pace out wide to perhaps hurt Chile with some of those counters against those aging fullbacks. Bolsa Jor is still there, having a good tournament, but a 35-year-old former Birmingham City fullback who's been playing in Chile, you would think that would be an area where they can be hurt. So we'll have to see how it goes.
Definitely. And before we jump off of the topic, I want to ask you about Alexi Sanchez, because I think, as you know, for Manchester United fans, they didn't expect anything like this, but it's something about that particular red jersey in Chile that he puts on that makes him Superman versus what we've seen, you know, for his club team. What do you contribute that resurgence to?
Yeah, I think he's grown in the tournament as well. I think to start with, he was very much a winger who was kind of getting back into a bit of form. And I don't think in terms of his fitness, he's quite at the ridiculous Alexis Sanchez machine levels of 3 years ago. But he's been growing into the tournament. He's definitely got far more confident. He had a good first game where he contributed, and he's got a few goals along the way. And I think he feels far more comfortable at Manchester United. He was bought as a bit of a luxury, as a bit of an extra. It never really felt that he had an important role, and he didn't necessarily feel valued, and they didn't really know what to do with him. And that's not the case in Chile. He's a big star in this Chilean side, and I do think the midfield is the key, but Alexis Sanchez gives them a bit of quality. And when a side is pushed back, you want someone like Alexis Sanchez to kind of make the difference in attack.
Sure. Now looking ahead, obviously with the two semifinals we have on Tuesday and Wednesday, what would be your predicted champion for this tournament, given the four semifinalists we have now? And does it correspond with who you thought was going to originally win this tournament back when it started?
Well, I think just the teams that are left in, I think Chile and Brazil will potentially be the finalists. I think Brazil, again, have really struggled against deep defences, but they won't face that against Argentina, and I do back them for that one. And I think Chile have grown in the tournament, and have particularly with the result against Colombia, where they were the better team. And I think on paper, Colombia are stronger. In the group stage, Colombia were stronger. I think Colombia have great depth, and I'm excited about the future, but I think the jerarquía, as they say in South America, kind of like the experience, the hierarchy, the authority of Chile showed in that game. And I think Chile would be the side that could best give Brazil a challenge in the final. I think that will be an interesting final to see. I think they could potentially match Brazil for a battle, but I think Brazil may have overcome their biggest challenges. It sounds strange getting to the semi-final, but they've shown over and over again that they struggle against those compact defences. And I don't really see them facing that again in the remaining game. I think Chile would be the closest, but I think they'd fancy themselves getting wide, getting pace, driving at teams that are going to be more open to attack and less suited to defend.
Now, Rob, I want to ask you the same question, because I think Simon has a great point there, because if you look at Paraguay, especially when they went down to 10 men in that match against Brazil, kind of really packed it in, and the result was a 0-0 draw, where if Brazil's allowed to be a little more open, it could be very, very dangerous to Argentina. What are your thoughts on these four teams going forward?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to repeat Simon's comments in regards to the two finals. I think Brazil are going to be much more open to attack against a team that isn't that key in defense as they were in past games against Paraguay, and I think in Venezuela as well. I see them going into the final. I think Chile as well, you know, it's kind of surprising the fact that, you know, this was a side that many people really did not have any expectation, because no one had known what the team would build into heading into this Copa America. But, you know, they've gotten it together. That midfield looks so compact. And I think that you kind of have to really see Chile as perhaps the team that could even give Brazil, you know, Simon said, and I'll echo his statements, I think that would give Brazil the biggest challenge in this final. I think it's kind of, it obviously didn't favor what I had predicted previously, but I think, you know, going on history, Brazil have never lost a Copa America on home soil, and I think that's going to continue that way heading into July 7th, the Maracanã, when Brazil lift their ninth Copa America title.
And not to be a naysayer, gentlemen, but there's something cyclical about an Argentina-Chile final, don't you think? So I think I will be the naysayer and go against both of you. I still believe in Messi, and I'll be that guy. But again, I think the two matchups really, really are going to be extremely interesting for their own particular reasons, and I think they're going to be fantastic to watch on Tuesday and Wednesday night. So, Simon, I want to thank you for coming on the show and joining us, and we look forward to connecting again sometime very soon.
Yeah, no, thanks for the invitation. It's always fun to talk about, and yeah, no, it's been fun. So, yeah, I'm going to look forward to these 3-4 massive games to come as well in the Copa America. So, looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Thanks, mate. Have a good night. And that was Simon Edwards from World Football Index joining us on the show. Rob, I wanna jump back into it, and I'm glad we're kind of on the Copa America here, because I know we were off for 2 weeks, but we were off 2 weeks for a very good reason. You, my friend, were actually covering Paraguay at the Copa America on this tournament. So I just want to get 2 minutes on your experience covering the team, covering the Copa America, and everything that happened in Brazil for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really a fun experience. I think for myself, I think first of all, we need to be here. We have to give ourselves a round of applause, an imaginative one at this point, for being able to get credentialed for such a big tournament like the Copa America, the oldest tournament in soccer history, almost 100 and more than 100 years old. To have that credential put in, obviously, you know, my name was on it, but where it demonstrated low-limit football and being able to represent low-limit football, I think it's just the completion of a job that we have been able to do for the last 5 years. And for me, I think it's very relieving to see that happen. And for me, I hope we achieve much more and go for more things in the future. But other than that, I think my trip was fantastic. I mean, I was able to see tremendous people, wonderful people, really get in depth with the national team. You know, as you had aforementioned, I went to the three games that Paraguay played. It was against Qatar in Rio de Janeiro. I did a 2-2 draw. Then I went to Belo Horizonte to see them tie Argentina and then finish it off against Salvador when they lost to Colombia 1-0. Unfortunately, I wasn't there for the last game against Brazil that they lost on penalties in Porto Alegre. But still, it was really a wonderful experience for me, I think, for myself, being able to go into a country that I, of course, really appreciate, the people. Football, obviously, isn't up for debate, but it was just a wonderful experience. I think for anyone that perhaps has doubts about Brazil because of it being in the news scene for very bad reasons, I just want to say that if you don't give it a chance, you will never know what you will think about it. True. Because for me, I've never felt more people who are so welcoming, so friendly. For me, I wasn't really fearful at all when it came to any danger or anything. I thought there was nothing of that. The food is great. The Ubers are super cheap. I'll give you that. But honestly, it was a wonderful experience. And like I said, in the beginning of my, trip report, as you could say, I'm just very proud to represent Lowland football and hope that it will open even more doors for us now as we continue to establish ourselves on a weekly basis.
Oh, amen. Amen to that. And if you had the chance to follow either Rob or myself or Low Limit Football on Twitter, a lot of those games, Rob was live tweeting from the press boxes. So that's what we were bringing to you as we covered it. So it was great to follow along. And we almost had to cancel tonight. If the penalty kicks went the other way, you probably would be back in Brazil covering tomorrow's matchup, because it would be Paraguay versus Argentina as opposed to Brazil versus Argentina. But it wasn't meant to be, so here we are tonight. So let's get in some matches of the week, Rob. Let's get the listeners everything to look forward to this week, as we call it, Championship Week. On Tuesday, tomorrow, we're going to kick off with the Women's World Cup, England versus the United States at 3 p.m. All the times we're going to list our Eastern Standard Times. Copa America will kick off their semifinal. Brazil-Argentina will be at 8:30 p.m. And the Gold Cup will kick off one of their semifinals, Haiti-Mexico, at 10 p.m. tomorrow night. On Wednesday, we get the second legs of the semifinals. We get Women's World Cup, Netherlands-Sweden at 3 p.m. Copa America will give you Chile-Peru at 8:30. And Jamaica-United States will be at 9 o'clock on Wednesday. On Saturday, we're going to get third-place matches for the Women's World Cup at 11 a.m. and third-place match for the Copa America at 3 p.m. And then on Sunday, it is Championship Sunday. And all these matches are spaced out. Make sure you have a rainy day. You sit on the couch. You get whatever your favorite beverage is ready and get to watching the football. Women's World Cup final, 11 a.m. The Copa America final will be at 4 p.m. and the Gold Cup final will be at 9 p.m. on Sunday. So definitely catch that. You've also got African Cup of Nations going on right now, and you still have MLS going on as well. So there are other tournaments and other competitions going to carry us through the summer here. But for next week for us, as before I hit the closing music, we're very excited. We're going to have John Arnold back on the show on Monday to talk Gold Cup and probably a little bit of transfer window as well. And we're going to obviously start to dive into that transfer window as teams are making serious moves back and forth here. So, Rob, without any further ado, let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So, for episode 246 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Neil Blackman for joining us, Jesse Loesch, and Simon Edwards as well, and helping us break down Championship Week. Coming up next week, like I had mentioned, John Arnold from Gold.com will be joining us to chat Gold Cup and other topics as well. So, for episode 246 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.